You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Last show, I had to really cut the program off prior to really finishing up some of my ideas. And what I was talking about was the problem that colleges face today, especially the junior colleges or community colleges that have open enrollment. Now, what I mean by open enrollment, you still have to have a high school diploma to enter college. But the problem is many of the students, because they come from really failing public schools, have difficulty with the basic skills of just reading and writing. And that's why many colleges, community colleges today, have so-called developmental courses, which supposedly in 16 weeks is going to accomplish what should have been learned in 12 years. And I like to call that Mission Impossible. It never works out. There's just no way you can make that up. The minimum requirements to go to college is a certain IQ level. I remember when I was applying, the guidance I got, because I was the first in my family to go to college, you need an IQ of at least 110 to go to college. Now, my IQ is much higher. It's near genius level. I'm not going to get into that. But my point is there are some minimum standards everybody should have to meet, one being intelligence. But the second is, can the person read and write? I'm not saying they're a Shakespeare, but can they at least read Shakespeare? And the answer, unfortunately, for a large percentage of the people that go to junior colleges or community colleges is upwards of a third simply can't. And it's very painful for them to get a reading assignment. And you can see the problem, because I don't care what subject you're taking. Most courses require a minimum amount of reading. It's assumed by the professors or instructors giving the course that you can read the material. That is an assumption that really is not correct. The instructors know this. It's not a secret, and it's across the nation. And what's happening is there's a failure from first grade to 12th grade to instill the minimum level of competency on basic skills, reading, writing, and also arithmetic and math. They also have courses in developmental math. And that usually, even if the person can read and write, a lot of times they simply don't have the math skills that they should have gotten in high school. I'm talking, when I went to high school, in 3 years, I completed four years of math. I took the algebra, your geometry, and also calculus. But I was headed for college. I was planning to go to college. And at that time, I took history. I'm trying to think some of the basic courses. History, English, French, a science course, and math. I had five courses. And I also had gym and after-curricular activities. But if you're going to college, that is the course load. You should be taking at least five, and in some cases in high school, six courses. Now, when I was going to high school, and this is a generational thing, there was no such thing as advanced placement. And that's another trend. More and more schools, for example, we have the Richland College has a high school on campus. Now, I'm not really in favor of that, but they're doing it, and the powers that be, it's a way to get enrollment up in courses. So, fine. And they make sure the students are at a level that they can handle a college-level course. And it's a great way for them, if you can handle it, to get your science and math out of the way, but take your science, whatever you're interested in. If you're interested in biology, chemistry, you're going to be a doctor or a nurse, you got to take courses in biology and anatomy, physiology, anatomy, biology, also general chemistry and organic chemistry, as well as math courses. So for the college student that can take advanced placement courses, it's a great opportunity. I wish I had that. I didn't, but I went to a fairly good high school. It wasn't the best, it wasn't the worst, but it was a good to above average high school and had good to above average teachers. Was it the best high school around? Absolutely not. It was a public school. I got lucky. I could have lived in a neighborhood where the high schools were terrible, and there were some fairly poor high schools. I wasn't. And the only reason I went to this school, it was near where my parents lived, and that was a function because my father was in the Army. We lived near Fort Monmouth, which is the training center for people going into telecommunications, U.S. Signal Corps, television photography, those types of courses. That's where the Army sends their people to be trained. And my father was stationed there. We lived on base or lived at, you know, on the fort. So I went to the nearest high school, which happened to be Monmouth Regional High School, which it was at the time. I was the second class of Monmouth Regional. It was a good high school. It was brand new at that time, and this was many, many years ago, and they had sports teams. I went out for sports as well. But that is the tip. If you're going to college, that's what's expected, and you have to get good grades. My grades were B plus, A minus. I wasn't a star student, but I did make National Honor Roll. I was in honor sections in history as well as English. Now, I'm giving you this background. What if you're not, don't have that capability? I was clearly so-called college material. But what I found when I went to major college is now I was competing with everyone that had all those skills and some even more. It, the way to think of it, it's like you might be a star on your baseball team, whether it's your high school team or your local baseball team. But guess what? When you go to college, the level of performance is a lot higher. And it gets even much higher if you try to go for the professional sports. There's a weeding out process. Your value is determined by competition. Who are your peers, where you're located at? Now, here's the problem. You have people at this school today that have difficulty reading as well as writing. It's painful for them to do that. They are not, most likely not going to finish college. And someone needs to tell them that. It's not easy. It's not like the opportunity is closed off. Yes, you could take the time and learn to read and write, but you're not going to do it in a 16-week course. You're either going to have to go back to school or, more likely, practice, practice, practice. And then when you learn to read and write, then you should come back to college. Does that happen? No. Most of these people will, not all, but most, will drop out. They will never, never get an associate's degree, and that's just for 2 years. That's not a, in my mind, that's not a college degree. That's not a bachelor's degree, whether it's in art or science. But that's upward of a third of the people attending it. And the problem is they don't have the requisite skill levels that they should have gotten in high school. Now, I want to connect this with a major story in the news today, namely the minimum wage. What's going to happen to these people? They're going to drop out of this college. Many of them have already dropped out of high school. They don't. The people that have dropped out of high school don't even have those skills. And they have a lifetime in front of them of manual labor. And initially, they're going to be faced with just earning the minimum wage. Because you are what you're worth. In other words, what someone is willing to pay for your skills. And if you don't have any work experience, you don't have any skill sets, you can barely read, barely write, you may or may not even be able to express yourself, the jobs available to you will be limited in scope as well as pay. And I've had many of those jobs. I've been a janitor. I've been a stocker at a store. I've been an inventory clerk. Now, did I plan to the rest of my life be at those jobs? Absolutely not. And they were really summer jobs. Now, I want you to put yourself in the place of an employer. And he's hiring people either for the summer or for part-time jobs, let's say in the evening. Who is he going to pick? And I'm competing for those jobs. Is he going to pick the high school dropout that can't read or write? Is he going to pick the junior college or community college, someone going to that school that can't read or write? No. He's going to hire people that are first have communication skills. That means that they can listen to instructions. They can express themselves. They can read and write and do basic math. Many of these jobs are for at the cash register. Now, today, a lot of that is gone away. When I was applying, they didn't have these scanners. You had to punch in the prices and make the change. It wasn't automatically determined for you. Now, why do you think your grocery stores and most stores today have scanners? It's simple. That makes it easier or faster for a checkout person to scan more goods. They don't have to punch it in. All they got to do is make sure they scan the label that has the price on it. And then after they're done, they accept money, and it tells them how much money they should collect, and it also tells them what the change will be. And for the change, a lot of stores have change machines, and they give you the dollars. Now, why do you think they have that? Because many of the people that are doing those jobs don't have basic math skills. They have to have a minimum level, and they are tested. But those are not good-paying jobs. And the phrase is they're not living wage jobs. Of course they're not living wage. Because the majority of people that take these jobs, most of them are part-time, not all of them. They have full-timers. I don't want to overly generalize. But there's a turnover in these jobs. And when you go to apply, they're going to look at your skill sets and your job experience. And the employer is going to make a determination of, one, how much you're worth, what's your value to him, and based on that, how much to pay. So if you have a very, very limited or no job experience, haven't been a good student, you're not going to college, you dropped out of high school, or you might have dropped out of college, it's not that they're not going to hire you, but they're going to hire you at a wage that is either at the minimum wage or slightly above. And in terms of the entire workforce, very, very few people, for example, over 24, are earning the minimum wage. Over 98% of the people are working or getting paid more than the minimum wage. So the minimum wage, what we're talking about, it's very much for entry-level jobs. And when you raise the minimum wage, which is what the president is proposing, as are the Democrats, the minimum wage today, it was increased, I believe, in 2007. That sounds wrong. I might be off a couple of years. It's $7.25 an hour. And I can do the math fairly quickly. That's a little over $15,000 a year. Multiply that by 2,000. So that's hard to live on. But what are many of those people, and they're usually young people, they're living with their parents. Not all of them, but many of them are. And the employer knows that. He needs people to stock the shelves. He needs people to move, unload trucks, put them on a cart, take them to the aisle, open the boxes, stock the shelves. I've done that. And I had limited work experience. Very limited work experience. But when I applied, I told them, I was a high school graduate, was attending college, enlisted it, and I was hired. Because then a high school diploma meant something. Today, I think it's the equivalent of a college degree. Not anymore. The problem is what's gone downhill, especially in your urban areas, so-called city core areas, many, if not most of them, controlled by the Democratic Party, where the teachers' unions really run public education, the results have gone down, down, and down. Now, they'll blame everyone. The parents, it's not our fault. I don't care whose fault it is, because if I'm an employer, that's not my problem. I need somebody to stock the shelves. I need somebody to check out the customers. I need somebody to do the inventory and place orders for the goods. All of those are jobs that you can get all over Dallas. They're not good paying jobs. But if you show up regularly and do a good job, most employers want to keep you. So what do they invariably do? They will increase either your hourly wage or your salary. And if you really show that you are on the ball, you relate well to customers, you can communicate, they're going to promote you. Let me tell you a little story. I go to three grocery stores. One is Kroger, major store. Another was Dollar General right across the street diagonally from them that I thought was somewhat poorly run. And apparently whoever was running it has gone out of business. Now someone apparently has bought the business and maybe is going to reopen. The last time I checked, the whole store was cleaned out, and that was fairly recently. For 2 months, it was locked up tight. And there was a little sign they had facilities problems. First it was computer problems, then facilities problems. Given the fact that most of my clients, when I was in the financial planning industry, were businesses, I know what was happening. The store wasn't managed correctly, and he probably had a shortage of cash flow is king in the small business, and had to close up. He couldn't pay his bills because it doesn't make sense. For 2 months, the lights were turned on, goods were on the shelves, but the store was locked up. He probably didn't pay his taxes, is my suspicion. That's one of the reasons, one reason why many small businesses have problems. They take it out of the pay of their employees, but don't pay the IRS. Well, the IRS is quick to shut you down. Something happened. I don't know what happened. I didn't know. But what struck me is the store didn't seem, you know, the floors weren't cleared. The material on the shelves were not kept in order. And I always was scratching my head. It was a fairly small store. It's tight quarters. But a lot could be improved. A tremendous amount could be improved. Now, I want to contrast that. There's another store I go to, Aldi's. And that's really right across the street from where I live. And they're a discount store, too. And I usually went there to get milk, vegetables, maybe some chocolate pudding, bread. I no longer eat pizza, but you can get good pizza there as well. The stores, everything is in order, and they got it down to a fine art. It's a chain, by the way. But I'm leading up to something. I've hit several of the checkout people. And usually the checkout person is also like an assistant manager. Not all of them, but some of them. Invariably, and I've had this more than once, it wasn't a random event. The gentleman that checks you out, sir, did you find everything that you needed? Yes, I did. Well, thank you for your business. He's very polite, very service-oriented. He makes a very good impression. He makes me feel like he welcomes my business. And the man is black, and he's probably in his late 20s, early 30s. And I'm pretty sure he's either the manager or the assistant manager. But what happens is, you've been in these grocery stores, suddenly there's a line, he drops everything, is there checking out people. That's what you need. You need those person skills, the communication skills. And he knows that the worst thing is to have long lines. Now, I get the same response at Kroger. They're really on it to make sure that they're not long lines. And that's just good retail practice. There's another store that I really don't visit much. It's a national chain. You probably can think of the name. Again, it's well managed. I know they know their inventory, relatively clean, in order. But they got a problem. Almost every time I've been there, there have been long lines. And I'm like most people. I don't mind two or three people. But literally every time I've gone there, 8 to 10 people, and they have multiple checkout. It's they must have at least 20. It's not that they don't have cash registers and places you can go. The problem they have, they don't have people manning them. Usually, and I go in the evenings, I need to say this,
not necessarily the busiest time, but at least half of those checkouts are closed. They could hire more people, and they should hire more people because it's an obvious problem, but they don't. And I also noticed this chain was not restocking some of its merchandise. Now, I'm not saying the company is not having problems. They're very, very, very successful. But it comes down to getting some basic training. It comes down to whoever manages that store. I know it's going to be different from store to store. So this store, I would rate at best average, really below average. But they're not hiring. Now, it could be a decision they have a freeze on hiring. Or it could be they can't find people to do the work. And I think that's the problem. Because people they hire leave. There's a high turnover. Now, what does this have to do with the minimum wage? Who gets hurt when the minimum wage is increased? First of all, you and me get hurt. Why? Most businesses, to the extent that the government comes in, and this is what we're talking about, government is mandating what the minimum wage should be. It might surprise you, but in one time in this country, there was no minimum wage. It also might surprise you that the unemployment rate then was under 2%. The last time we didn't have the minimum wage was when Calvin Coolidge was president. This was in the 1920s, and the unemployment rate was less than 2%. Most people had jobs. Now, what's happened is a lot of well-meaning, good-intentioned people say we need to pass a law requiring businesses pay a minimum wage. Well, it depends where that minimum wage is set relative to what the going rate is. Sometimes the minimum wage is meaningless because most, if not all, the people in a specific locality are paying a lot more than the minimum wage. You know, it's academic. If you're in a situation in a town or a city that's booming, people with limited experience get paid more than the minimum wage. So people don't care about it. And just keep in mind that when you're talking young people, well, people in their 20s, especially 24 or older, less than 2% get the minimum wage. Because the minimum wage is primarily the wage for inexperienced, unskilled labor, where the employer has no idea when you walk in and fill out an application, A, whether you're reliable, which means will you show up on time and work whatever hours they have? Do you have certain basic skill sets, such as can you communicate with customers? Are you courteous? Do you have the right attitude? Can you make change? Can you work? Are you a worker? To the business owner, he is paying, he doesn't know your value, so he's going to pay you the minimum that he can afford. And for many businesses, that is the minimum wage. For other businesses and where the labor market is really tight, it's going to be higher than the minimum wage. But an important point is this. If you show up, if you work hard, do a good job, within a matter of a few years, you will be making a lot more than the minimum wage. It's almost guaranteed. And you'll be getting benefits because employers want to keep good employees. It's not hard to understand. It's not that the employers don't want to pay more. In many situations, they can't because the person is just not that productive. And when you insist on, and the government is trying to get this passed, it's not going to pass the House because the Republican Party is resisting it. My position is very simple. Do away with the minimum wage. And the argument is fairly simple. The people that want to raise the minimum wage higher, higher, and higher are the unions. And if you're wondering why the Democratic Party, including the Black Caucus, are for raising the minimum wage, is the fact that they have a coalition that includes unions. And the unions want to increase it. really to improve what their workers are getting and discriminate against people that could compete with them at a lower rate. There are people that will work not only for the minimum wage, but less than the minimum wage, and the unions don't want that competition. So they raise the minimum wage where it makes it prohibitive for businesses to hire a person. Because if you're only worth $5 and the minimum wage is set at 10, I'm not going to hire you. I'm going to try to find someone that's more qualified, has more experience, more skill set for that $10 job. And where you have high rates of unemployment, there are many, many applicants. And the phrase is they're overqualified. But if I have a choice of literally dozens of overqualified applicants versus a high, unskilled, limited work experience person, I'm going to for the minimum wage, I'm going to pick the person that has the better skill set. Now, what surprises me and it might surprise you is who gets hurt when you raise the minimum wage? Obviously, if you're making $7.25 and the minimum wage, let's say, is raised to $10, and you still have that job, you're going to benefit. Not hard to understand. But most employers, they have several employees that are making the minimum wage. Let's say they have, keep it simple, 10. And now they have to pay, instead of 7.25, have to pay $10. What are they going to do? They're going to do one or two things, or really both. One is they're going to increase their prices, and to a certain extent, depending on the good or service, that might have an impact on what people buy. Your prices go up. Well, it's basic economics. As prices go up, people buy less of it. As prices go down, people buy more of it. So when the price of labor goes up, and that in turn impacts the price of the goods or services they're selling, consumers would tend to purchase less. And the same thing applies for the employer. He will most likely lay off one or more of his employees, maybe one or two. So it's a mix. No one really knows, because it's going to vary from business to business. And it also depends on how price sensitive the good or service they're selling is. So-called price elasticity. I'm not going to give you an economic lecture. So who gets hurt are the people that are less skilled, generally. And there's more to it. Who shows up? You can literally make a list. Do they show up in time? Do they work their entire shift? In other words, are they reliable? Do they have good customer service skills? Can they communicate? Can they do their job? Do they show initiative? Do they have a strong work ethic? Well, most employers can rank their employees. So he wants to keep the best employees, and who is he going to lay off? The person that either misses work or doesn't show up, or when he does show up, kind of goofs off on the job. He does his job, but he's really not into it. That person's going to be gone. And if that person happens to be the high school dropout or college dropout, so be it. You see, what's in the news today or yesterday was the Congressional Budget Office released a report of the impact of the federal government increasing the minimum wage from either not to $9 or $10. And at $10, the impact, their estimate was, that could be upwards of $500,000, less if it's $9. But you need to take it one step further. Who gets hurt? Do you think the college graduate is going to get hurt? No. It's really going to be the people at the low end, the low income, low skill, few jobs, low skills, and they have difficulty reading and writing. Who's going to get hurt? It's going to be the young, teenagers. Teenagers will bear the brunt of this, as will people in their early 20s. Though, and I don't necessarily, I don't agree with the CBO's estimates. I think they're going to be, it's much more than that. But they're so-called bipartisan. And the head of the CBO was giving a speech, and he responded to some criticisms of the White House, namely the President's Council of Economic Advisors, who was trying to make the point, well, it's going to raise a lot more people out of poverty. Yeah, of course. The people that go from $7.25 to $10 and keep their jobs, and the you have a wage, just like you have an interest structure for money, you have the price of money, you have a wage structure. So when the minimum wage goes up, what tends to happen is, especially the people close to that minimum wage, their wages go up. The college graduates, or the people with some college experience as well as skills, their employment opportunities are not really sensitive to changes in the minimum wage. The people that are sensitive and where the unemployment rates go up are teenagers and young people, especially minorities such as blacks and Hispanics. They're the ones that either are going to be laid off or not even hired. In other words, their job opportunities are going to shrink. And that's what's always forgotten about, not talked about, not forgotten about. Because the well-meaning people say, well, I think, you know, you can't live on $7.25. You know, at $10 an hour, that's $20,000 a year. I couldn't live on that. Well, guess what? Over 20% of the American people live on $20,000 a year. I always say, if you really feel so strongly about it, let's raise it to $20. Now, they won't go that far. Why? Because what would be the impact? Unemployment would shoot up, and not just for teenagers. You see, if you look at the past history of unemployment rates of teenagers, what invariably happens when the minimum wage is increased over time, the teenage unemployment rate goes up. It's over 20% today. That's why I'm for eliminating the minimum wage for one simple reason, and it's not hard to understand. If you're not working, what is your wage? It's zero. If you're one of the unfortunate ones that were laid off should the minimum wage go into effect, what is your wage? It's zero. Now, a year from now, if you're still unemployed, what's your wage? It's zero. Would you work for $5? I'm willing to bet many of those people would say, yeah, I can't seem to find a job. And the reason is they haven't had many jobs. And they don't really have many qualifications to recommend them for a job. You see, it's the least skilled, the people with very limited experience in terms of employment, many of them college as well as high school dropouts, that are increasingly finding they can't find a full-time job. They are lucky if they can find a part-time job. And when the minimum wage goes up, many of those will be out of a job, and many that were looking can't find it. Why can't they find it? Guess who they're competing against? People that have more job experience, people that have more education, people that have more skill sets that are also applying for the job. We have a competitive marketplace, including a competitive marketplace for labor. And employers look at your application. Many jobs you have to have a resume. And what are they looking for? Well, what jobs have you held? What were the responsibilities of those jobs? Did you perform well on the job? How long did you stay in that position? Why did you leave? Were you laid off? Did you quit for a better job? And it's always useful to put yourself in the place of an employer. It's not necessarily a business, any employer. They want to attract and retain good employees. That's just basic business. Because it costs them money and time to train an employee. You have now many of these jobs, there's not much training needed. But there is some. You got to be able to stock the shelves, for example. And you should periodically make sure everything's squared away. You got to know how to unload a truck in a timely manner and work as a team to do that. And maybe even work some equipment to do that. It does take some minimum skill to be a cashier or work in the vegetable department, unloading the vegetables and putting them out on display. Those are not high-paying jobs. Many of them are minimum wage jobs. But to the extent that an employee shows initiative, shows he has a strong work ethic, that's reliable, what is the employer going to do? Over time, that person will be promoted, but he also will receive raises. Now, many people don't stay at those jobs. There's a turnover. But the ones that do, and it's usually because they don't have the educational skills, but they show initiative, will get promoted to maybe the service desk or assistant manager, and you usually several if you're open many shifts. And eventually you can work your way up to running a store or maybe even a district, several stores. But you have to have a strong work ethic. You have to have a strong communication skills, listening skills. You need to express yourself. You need to be able to read and write. These are just basic skill sets that I would expect any high school graduate to have. You don't need college degrees for these jobs. And most of these people are making more than the minimum wage. Are they making a lot more than the minimum wage? No, they're not. Because if you want to earn $25 an hour, $50 an hour, $75 an hour, I will tell you, you better have some unique skill sets. Because, A, those jobs are going to be very competitive, and it's the talented individual that's going to get that job. Let's make it personal for a minute. I am trying to get a national syndicated talk show on the air. People are looking at me, not really looking, they're listening to me to see, can this individual carry a show? Can he produce a show? Can he present a show? Keep it interesting. And since it's a talk show, I need to be able to communicate. I need to be able to talk. Now, we're not equipped for callers. I would welcome callers, but that's just the fact that we are a college radio station. And many people that are in the industry today got their start at college radio stations. And then, now I wasn't interested in radio. I had different career paths, but this is kind of my fourth or fifth career, depending how you want to count. And I didn't know I could do this. But I gave it a shot and am now convinced I not only can do it, I think I do it fairly well. I'm trying to get better at it. And the only way you get better at it is practice, practice, practice. As I walked into the studio, I was talking to the lady in charge of the department, and she asked me, well, how long do you think you're going to be running today? I said, well, an hour. But I turned to her and said, this is, as far as I'm concerned, is practice. I'm trying to get better at what I'm doing. In other words, improve my skills. And the way you get better is every day or every weekday, present a radio show. And you have to tie it to the news. What current events are breaking? I don't do topic shows. And usually when I walk in, and I may or may not have an I didn't really have an idea for this show. But the key news story today is the fact that the president, well, he's already signed this. This is somewhat of a continuing story. He's already approved by executive order the raising of the federal wage to $10.10 for new people that are hired. That is not the same as increasing the minimum wage for everyone in the country, because only a small percentage are federal contractors. But the Democratic Party, which President Obama heads, is pushing in the House and the Senate to increase the minimum wage. They really should stop and think, and they really don't want to stop and think. Who does it hurt? It hurts blacks, Hispanics, and poor whites by far. And it's young people that it hurts. Young people are going to increasingly find it more and more difficult to find their first job. And you see it in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, monthly statistics for teenage unemployment. It's over 20%. It might surprise you, but there have been periods when it's been under 10%. You see, countries, and many of them have, in Europe in particular, have minimum wage laws. And the most generous ones also have very, very high unemployment rates, not only for teenagers, which is invariably over 20%, but the overall population as well. You see, this is just another example of big government intervention into the economy. We are the ruling elites. We know better. And this is our idea, our policy for increasing the prosperity of the American people, when it's been demonstrated time and time and time again, when you increase the minimum wage, who gets hurt? It's young people, unskilled, your high school and your college graduates. The people that need that first job, need a chance. And the problem is, it's not that they're not people hiring for the minimum wage. There are literally dozens of applicants for it. The employer has a choice who he's going to select. And he's not going to select the person that can't write and fill out an application, has difficulty expressing themselves, has problems reading as well as listening. He's going to tend to hire at least a high school graduate, knowing that many of them have difficulty reading. But that's one way to screen out. He might even be more selective and hire the college graduate, assuming, rightly or wrongly, that the person, if he's gone to college, I assume he can read, I assume he can write, I assume he can make basic math calculations, and I'm assuming he can communicate. It's very difficult to get 4 years of college without those basic requisite skill sets that really all, if near all, of the American people should have. Unfortunately, that is simply not the case, because we have a failing school system, largely due to unions. I'm going to put the blame where it belongs. And it's the unions that are the big advocates of increasing the minimum wage. It eliminates competition. It was used prior to the Civil Rights Act of the 60s to discriminate against blacks. Unions wanted to jack up the prices or the wage rates. So employers wouldn't hire people that are unskilled because they're not worth that. You need to understand you're only worth what someone else is willing to pay you. Let's give an example that I think anyone can understand. Right now, we're going through I don't follow football that closely, and I don't know the exact dates. But this is the time of the year that the National Football League, the various teams, have to pick who are the college players. It's the draft. Who are they going to pick to join their team? They can't pick everybody. And what every team does is say, okay, we have so many offensive positions, so many defensive positions. Where are our weak spots? Where do we need to recruit talented people? And there are numerous college football programs, and there are people that have specialized skills. So what they're doing is matching, here's where we're weak, that we need to really draft people with who's out there, and they're competing with other football teams. And there are rounds. Every round you get a pick. So some players might be picked in the first round. Your most talented, skilled players usually go in the first couple of rounds. And if they are picked, they sign a contract, and they make a lot of money. But you need to keep in mind, it's usually for a short period of time. 3 years is fairly typical. Because just because you're picked and are offered a contract, you got to produce on the field. And many players can't make the transition from college football to a much higher level of play in professional sports. So they could be really talented, have great statistics, really impress the coaches and the general managers of various teams. But those teams are taking a chance. Will this person's performance continue to be at the level of our team? And will he fit in the team? There's chemistry involved and the type of offense and defense each team plays. Now, I don't do sports analysis. I don't follow teams. But here's the point. There are many talented, when I was in high, jocks. They're the star quarterbacks, the star pitchers, the sports stars of your high school. Many of them got scholarships, athletic scholarships, to play for various college teams. And unfortunately, many of them did not have the academic skills to pass college courses. Some do, but many don't. No secret, the colleges were recruiting them to play, for example, college football, basketball, or baseball. They didn't get the scholarship because they were an A student. They got the scholarship because they were an excellent quarterback, pitcher, shooter, whatever. And as long as they maintain a minimum grade point, many of the real stars don't even go to classes. Here's my point. There is only a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage that first make the transition from high school to college and then make the transition from college to professional sports. Your odds, these are long odds. And you're only going to get a big paycheck at the end if you produce, if there are results. Your value to a professional sports team is whether or not you're productive, whether you produce the results that they were expecting. If you can, they're going to try to keep you and renegotiate the contract. If you can't, you will be cut. And what that means is, especially if you can't read or have trouble reading, writing, or listening, you're not going to get the multi-million dollar contract. You're going to be competing with dozens of people for these minimum wage jobs, because guess what, folks? That's what if I'm hiring for a stocker in a grocery store, I don't care if you're a great pitcher or football player. The only thing I care about is, do you come to work on time? Do you work hard? Do you produce enough money to make it worth to me to pay you a minimum wage? So don't be fooled that it's supply and demand. It's basic economics. And when the government arbitrarily manipulates that, and this is what it is, it's wage and price controls, by dictating a minimum or floor level that all workers have to have. Economic policies have consequences, and the consequences are unemployment for the least skilled, the least talented portion of our labor force. And those are the facts of life. That's how the real world works. President Obama can dictate any wage. Why not make it $20, Mr. President? Now, he knows the answer. Because if he did, the outrage, the screaming, the hollering would be tremendous. Why? Because if it really went into effect and got passed, you would have not hundreds of thousands of people being unemployed. You would have tens of millions of people being employed. You see, that's the problem with government interference. Most of those people have never met a payroll, have never run a business. They don't have a clue of the demands placed on small business owners to run a business. And some of those small businesses can pass on the increase of wages that they have to pay to their customers. But many businesses simply can't, or only can do it partially. So what does that invariably lead to? People are going to get hurt. People are going to be laid off. People's hours are going to be cut. And many people are going to be out of work for many weeks, months, or years, and really have a lifetime of really at the bottom 10% or less. Only a small percentage of the labor force makes the minimum wage. Yet the Democratic Party, including President Obama, wants to make this an issue. As far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't be an issue, because it's really adversely affects the least capable people in our society. The people that are never going to graduate from college, never really going to have a good job. They don't have any unique skill or talent. You are what you're worth, and you're only worth what someone is willing and able to pay you. Now, if you have a unique talent and that's in demand, guess what? You'll get paid for that talent. But if you don't, if you can't read, you can't write, you're not very good listening or paying attention, you're going to have a lifetime of minimum wage jobs, and you're probably going to find it very difficult to live on that. But those people are the exception. They're not the rule. I hate it when the ruling elite in Washington hurts people, and increasing the minimum wage will hurt hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Richland College or the DCCD. Now, back to the music.